When people experience traumatic events, does that encourage their creativity or inhibit it? This was one of the questions asked at an unusual panel in New York last week that brought together novelists and psychoanalysts. While the authors had all written about apocalyptic themes in the past, the attacks of September 11th were clearly on the organizers' minds. NPR's Margot Adler reports.
The program was put on by the Psychoanalytic Association of New York, partly in the hope that a dialogue between creative writers and psychoanalysts could create new insights into the relationship between trauma and creativity. The authors, Robert Stone, Jim Shepard, and Dennis Johnson, have all written about individuals in extreme situations. They've all written about people who strive for impossible perfection and are disillusioned. Noting that since September 11th, many people have experienced intense anxiety and a numbness that has inhibited the creative process, Dr. Sandra Leong, who opened the program, posed this idea.
Perhaps it is useful to have affirmed to us the difference between passion and violence that threaten civilization and that which, expressed in literature, nourishes our civilization.
In other words, perhaps by engaging the work of writers who have mastered traumatic themes, yet managed to stay alive and playful in their work, one could better understand the relationship between creativity and catastrophic events. Jane Kite, an analyst at the Psychoanalytic Institute of New England, noted that psychoanalysts and writers have been circling around each other ever since the beginning of psychoanalysis.
I can't speak for writers, but I can say that a certain amount of envy has fueled the analyst's wishes to decode the writer's secrets, specifically the secret of their creativity. Freud went right to the heart of it in 1908 when he remarked that even the clearest analytic insight into the writer's choice of material and into the art of writing itself will never make creative writers of analysts.
The format of the program was simple. A writer would read and a psychoanalyst would respond. Author Jim Shepard read a part of his short story, Love and Hydrogen. It takes place aboard the Hindenburg before and during its explosive demise. Jim Shepard.
Imagine five or six city blocks could lift with a bump and float away. The impression the 804-foot Hindenburg gives on the ground is that of an airship built by giants and excessive even to their purposes. The fabric hull and mainframe curve upward 16 stories high.
After the reading, psychoanalyst Jane Kite responded in a most contemporary way.
The story opens with the manic size of the Hindenburg, its excess. We are already in anxious and familiar territory here. Was it something about the sheer audacity of the World Trade Center that marked it for destruction? These may not have been Jim's thoughts as he wrote the story, but by this time they are part of our response to it, as we sift through all the registers of what happened.
In the story, Love and Hydrogen, it's never clear what trips the apocalypse. Is the Hindenburg's demise caused by a captain's miscalculation, by a reckless sexual encounter, by sabotage by an anti-fascist, or did it just happen? As Shelley Orgel, a clinical professor of psychiatry at NYU, observes about another story, these questions can rarely be answered. Sigmund Freud, he says, understood this.
For Freud, if not regrettably for some of his followers, beyond interpretation, there was always a mystery. Ungraspable by intelligence, inexpressible by words, unrememberable except in dim traces.
At the very end of Love and Hydrogen, Shepard writes words that could symbolize every mistaken belief in unattainable perfection, whether it be those of the Nazis in this story or the suicide bombers of today. He imagines a German official watching the Hindenburg disaster and musing on what could have been. Life, motion, everything, he says, was untrammeled and without limitation, ours. Robert Stone, the author of Dog Soldiers and Children of Light, read a chapter from his novel Outer Bridge Reach. The same longing for an unattainable perfection is there in the protagonist who goes to sea, leaving behind a dysfunctional life and seeking in the ocean and a sailboat race the perfection he lacks. In one passage, he swims and, tempting fate, almost loses the safety line of the boat. Back on the deck, he watches as a shark comes alongside. Robert Stone.
It was perfect, he thought. Worshipful. At home. Unlike him. When the shark was gone, Brown found himself discontent. When he tried, sitting at his navigation table, to describe for his journal what had happened, his swimming, missing the line, the shark coming, he could not make it turn out right, nor could he quite manage the thing in memory. Remembering it, he felt both fear and longing, insulted and exalted. In the middle of the night, when the next false breeze came up, Brown shivered and slaked his peculiar thirst with water.
At the end of the book, Brown, the protagonist, commits suicide. Psychoanalyst Shelley Orgel gives these comments.
Abandoning his damaged plastic boat, he seeks to heal his split self, to be true to the lost dreams of his youth, to make truth his bride. But he can live only in the human world, and in it, only flawed, divided creatures can survive. Those who can accept that absolute truth is unobtainable, those who can love and hate others and themselves in their imperfectness, imperfectly.
This was perhaps the main insight of all the analysts that were on the panel, that being human means being imperfect, that human beings must learn to live comfortably with imperfection, and that attempts to create an impossible paradise lead not only to personal catastrophe, but to apocalyptic events in the world. Margot Adler, NPR News, New York.